This is The Takeaway. I'm Melissa Harris-Perry. Last week, the governor of Puerto Rico announced that all public school teachers will receive a temporary salary increase of up to $1,000 per month. Now, this temporary wage increase is a result of weeks of direct action, as thousands of public employees in Puerto Rico have used public demonstration and work stoppages to demand better pay and working conditions. To learn more about it, we talked with a representative from the teachers' union in Puerto Rico.
Mi nombre es Víctor M. Bonilla Sánchez, presidente de la Asociación de Maestros de Puerto Rico.
Víctor Bonilla Sánchez leads the Puerto Rican Teachers Association, and he spent 30 years as a high school Spanish language teacher. He says that he felt many of the frustrations that teachers are currently expressing, all due to insufficient funding for the Puerto Rican school system.
En cuanto a las condiciones de trabajo, también viví lo que están viviendo los compañeros maestros, donde hay fondos federales que nunca los vemos llegar donde tienen que llegar, que es al entorno escolar, al estudiante y a mejoras de condiciones de trabajo de nuestros colegas.
As Victor told us here, teachers in Puerto Rico have repeatedly experienced the problem of being promised more federal resources, but then discovering those resources never appear.
El maestro fue y se ha visto maltratado en cuanto a las condiciones de trabajo después de los huracanes Irma y María, luego de los temblores, y con la pandemia han hecho el trabajo de forma excelente, pero verdaderamente se han sentido marginados en cuanto a la justicia salarial.
Indeed, 13 years without a pay increase is challenging for any professional. But as Victor says, it's particularly troubling when we consider that teachers in Puerto Rico have had to manage the challenges of hurricanes Irma and Maria, the 2020 earthquakes, and the pandemic. And this is why Victor Bonilla Sanchez says the Teachers Association of Puerto Rico and its local union are tired of hearing only words rather than seeing action, which acknowledge the important contribution of teachers to society.
Siempre hemos entendido y para la Asociación de Maestros de Puerto Rico y su local sindical es que el ya estamos cansados, ¿verdad? De solamente palabras y que sean hechos que nos reconozcan la labor que tienen maestro, que nos den el sitial que tenemos en una sociedad.
After all, Victor told us, teachers are educating the souls of the nation.
Y ese es mi mayor deseo, que en Puerto Rico se le reconozca al maestro y se le dé la valía que merecemos. Y la merecemos porque educamos almas, y educar almas es vivir para el progreso de un país y de una nación.
For more on this, I'm joined now by Donica Cotto, correspondent for the AP covering the Caribbean. Welcome back to The Takeaway, Donica.
Thank you for having me.
So let's start with the teachers. What are their concerns?
Well, there are multiple concerns. Like you mentioned, you know, the base salary hasn't increased in 13 years, but that's coupled with, you know, an increase in higher utility bills, more expensive grocery bills. A lot of people are still trying to recuperate from the hurricanes, from a string of strong earthquakes, and, you know, the economic crisis and the pandemic. And so one of the growing concerns, despite the announcement of the increase, is where is the money going to come from after those federal funds run out in 2024? Because the governor also has promised an increase for firefighters, but those federal funds also are going to run out in 2026. So you have a lot of hesitancy, a lot of fear that, you know, in a couple of years, these increases are just going to disappear. And the ongoing protests, you know, are in part to ensure that, you know, these local funds are, you know, going to appear in some way. Legislators are drafting a bill that would make the salary increases permanent, but they don't identify yet where the money will come from. And teachers and firefighters as well are also facing dwindling pensions. You know, they've raised the retirement age and they've cut benefits. So that's going to be another hit for those public employees.
In some ways, this is not that different than some of what's happening on in the mainland. I mean, certainly a teacher shortage has driven the ability of everyone from substitutes to school nurses to ask for better pay and working conditions. But I'm wondering if there's something about Puerto Rico that has created a particular urgency for teachers.
Indeed. I mean, it's been a long time since they've seen a salary increase. A lot of them are working 2 to 3 jobs. There was a recent fatal accident in which a teacher died. He had been working overnight as a security guard. And that, you know, sort of also propelled or led to these protests. You know, it's saying people are actually dying because they're trying to make, you know, enough money to just be able to have a basic life. And they're not even able to do that. And in part, the ongoing protests also are fueled by comments from the governor. He recently said that no one is obligated to be a firefighter, a police officer, or a teacher, and that, you know, you can imagine did not go over well with many of the public employees.
Oh, yeah, that's that is not necessarily the way to win friends and influence people. Talk to me about, teachers were leading, but you've mentioned firefighters a couple times here. Are there other public workers who are joining and sort of, again, part of the nature of their concerns?
Indeed. I mean, throughout the years, these public employees have been fighting behind doors, meeting with the government, trying to seek pay raises. But the teachers did embolden, other public employees, and they were encouraged by the recent announcements of increases for firefighters and teachers. So they've joined the movement. There's another island-wide strike scheduled for Friday. And they're saying, well, you know, if you were able to do it for the teachers and the firefighters, why not us? So among them are forensic science workers, health professionals, including paramedics and all hospital staff. Paramedics, for example, haven't had a salary increase in 12 years, while firefighters haven't had one in more than 2 decades. So there's just, you know, a lot of pressure to sort of have salaries catch up with, you know, the current economy, which, you know, is mired in a crisis and, certainly not helped by the debt crisis as well as Puerto Rico tries to emerge from a bankruptcy process.
Now, of course, just one more beat on paramedics and firefighters, because it seems critical to place that in the context of the hurricanes, of the 2020 earthquakes, and of course, of COVID.
Indeed. I mean, I spoke to one of the union leaders for firefighters, and he said, you know, most of the time, more than 80% of fire stations, we only have one person there. I mean, there's just not enough people to go around, and he blames that in part due to the salaries. I mean, you have firefighters making a base salary of roughly $1,750 a month, and, the more than 100 people who graduated from the academy in December, 40 of them have already left, and they say, you know, we need, you know, to be able to offer people a salary where they can live, just a basic life. I mean, because many of them are working other jobs. Some of them, as you know, have gone to the U.S. mainland, but others have family here, aging parents that they need to take care of. So, you know, in part, they feel like they have to stay here to care for their family.
Now tell me, who is the oversight board?
Well, the Oversight Board was created in 2016 by U.S. Congress, and this was sort of part of a law to help Puerto Rico emerge from bankruptcy, because in 2015, Puerto Rico's former governor had declared that the more than $70 billion public debt load was unpayable. And then in 2017, the island filed for the biggest municipal bankruptcy in history. So in these recent years, there's just been, you know, going back and forth, you know, trying to negotiate with creditors, trying to reach an agreement to, you know, pull the island out of this bankruptcy process. And they finally had a federal judge issue a plan that will do exactly that. The debt payments will be less than before. Not as much tax money will be going to creditors. But again, this is still a hard hit for the island. And one of the concerns from some economists is that the governor, when he swiftly announced the salary increase for teachers and firefighters, they say that that kind of improvisation is exactly what helped unleash the debt crisis. So, they know that it's unlikely. I mean, even if state funds were to be found for these increases, that it's unlikely the board will approve them because it has previously denied them. And the board, again, has the final word on that.
Donica Cotto is a correspondent for the AP covering the Caribbean. Donica, thank you for joining The Takeaway.
Thank you very much for having me.
We're going to continue our conversation about the protests in Puerto Rico by asking, how did we get here? With me now is Fernando Tornas Aponte, assistant professor of public policy and political science at the University of Maryland, Baltimore County. Welcome to The Takeaway, Fernando.
Thank you for having me.
So let's begin with the economic crisis in Puerto Rico. Talk to me about its origins.
This has been a long time coming. Puerto Rico has failed to develop an economic model of economic growth for as long as it's been a colony of the United States. It was never sustainable to give foreign companies tax incentives to manufacture in Puerto Rico, because a lot of that financial capital was never reinvested in Puerto Rico. So once tax incentives were removed under the Clinton administration, Puerto Rico lost a lot of manufacturing, the presence of a lot of manufacturing companies, mostly through income tax revenue, not necessarily through taxation on the financial capital of the companies themselves. And that really shrunk its revenue base, all the while having big commitments to social policies like healthcare, education, all of which are now under attack because of these new policies that are meant to address this economic crisis. So very, very little tax revenue and a lot of expenditures on social policies like education and healthcare.
Okay, so now I feel like we're going to have to take one step back further than where we started here. So talk to me, when you say these tax incentives to do manufacturing in Puerto Rico, so I think that I understand what you're saying is that the loss of revenue was less about the companies moving out and more about the fact that as they moved out, then people weren't making income and those individuals weren't paying into the taxes because they didn't have income, but it wasn't that the companies themselves had previously been paying sort of a sufficient revenue into the island.
That's exactly right. No, they weren't really contributing that much other than employing folks in many cases in good paying jobs. And it was the tax revenue from those income taxes, the local tax revenues, that were really propelling the economy and sort of artificially injecting money into the economy. And I say artificially because these tax incentives, as soon as they were removed, it was revealed that Puerto Rico didn't really have a sustainable model for economic growth that did not depend on something like these major tax incentives. Once they were removed, manufacturing companies were able to find more profitable places to manufacture their medicines.
Okay. Hold for me just one moment. We're going to take a very quick break. And when we come back, I want to understand more about the pharmaceutical angle.
WNYC Studios is supported by Rocket Money. Did you know nearly 75% of people have subscriptions they've forgotten about? Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills so that you can grow your savings. Rocket Money will even try to negotiate your bills for you by up to 20%. All you have to do is submit a picture of your bill, and Rocket Money takes care of the rest. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has saved a total of $500 million in canceled subscriptions, saving members up to $740 a year when using all of the app's features. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/WNYC. That's rocketmoney.com/WNYC.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Geoffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at The New Yorker. So join us every week on The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.
We've been talking about some of the conditions that led to the recent protests by public employees in Puerto Rico with Assistant Professor of Public Policy at the University of Maryland, Baltimore County, Fernando Tornas Aponte. All right, Fernando, so you were just saying to manufacture their medicines. Were these primarily pharmaceutical companies?
That's correct. And there were other industries in Puerto Rico, like the textile manufacturing industry and other industries that were set up to service the pharmaceutical manufacturing industry, many of which took a big, big loss when these started to move into other countries and other settings.
Okay, so when you say there were tax incentives and then they were removed, who is both, or what sort of government entity, what decision makers were both making the decision to implement the initial incentives and to remove the incentives?
The U.S. federal government had developed, as part of the U.S. tax code, a Section 936. It was known as Section 936. And this provided these tax incentives to develop manufacturing industries in the pharmaceutical industry, particularly in Puerto Rico. There were some advocacy amongst Puerto Ricans, as well as others in the United States, continental United States, asking to remove these tax incentives. Some, for instance, in Puerto Rico, who supported statehood, argued that Puerto Rico would never be admitted as a state if it was considered this exceptional case where manufacturing companies were going to set up and eschew their tax responsibilities. So there were some advocacy amongst those who were saying, this is not the route to statehood. It ended up being actually a huge attack on the Puerto Rican economy. But again, this was always destined to fail because it was an artificial way of propping up this economy. Some have argued that this was in part a result of the Cold War because the United States wanted to show that Puerto Rico was a beacon of hope for capitalist economic development in the Caribbean and compare that to the struggles of socialist and communist countries in Latin America, particularly Cuba.
Of course, Cuba is not an imperialized space. It's not a colony. It exists as its own independent nation. And what I hear you saying is that this is in part related to this long colonial and semi-colonial relationship between mainland U.S. and Puerto Rico.
That's correct. And what has been prompting some of these protests has been the fact that Puerto Ricans are currently facing a massive amount of debt, a lot of which was issued under dubious circumstances by the local government in order to continue spending in ways that were essentially known as clientelistic. So ways in which they spent that made sure that they would get reelected by providing things like universal health care in Puerto Rico, among other kinds of what is known as pork barrel spending. So a lot of spending that helps their constituents and makes sure that they go back and vote for them when the elections come around. Well, the problem was that people weren't necessarily involved in a lot of these efforts to issue all these bonds and generate this huge debt. And once this debt amounted to more than $70 billion, which for a small archipelago like Puerto Rico is a lot of money to owe, then finally, two administrations ago, Alejandro García Padilla, the governor at the time, said this debt is unpayable. Well, by virtue of being a colony of the United States, Puerto Rico does not have access to the kind of bankruptcies that a place like Detroit or other places the United States have been able to access. So what happened? There had to be federal legislation passed in order to give Puerto Rico a route to bankruptcy. The problem is that Puerto Ricans were not a part of these decision-making processes of restructuring Puerto Rico's debt. And they were instead told, you have to pay for the mistakes of these previous administrations, and you will have to take on the burden of paying back all these folks who invested in your debt. Part of the problem with that debt is that, again, it was issued under dubious circumstances. Puerto Rico was never legally allowed under its own constitution to issue that much debt. But the local government nor the federal government have been willing to audit the debt and prosecute those who were responsible for issuing that kind of debt.
There's already been significant population decline in Puerto Rico after, you know, as you talked about sort of this economic crisis and the manufacturing base falling out. And then, of course, these recent disasters of Hurricane Maria, of the earthquake, of all of the ways in which we are seeing these very significant challenges. given the population decline, is there a way to climb out of this?
That's a big question, right? Because one of the things that people are really frustrated about is that they're given all of these different new policies that essentially take away their schools, they take away their hospitals, they take away all of their essentially social spending, the things that makes a country run, but they are not giving any hope for any kind of economic model that is an alternative to what we've had over the history of Puerto Rico. So folks are really frustrated right now because they haven't seen any actual proposals on behalf of the United States or from local administrations that signal any kind of actual coherent philosophy for bringing the country out of crisis.
Under these circumstances, does Puerto Rico fare better by becoming a state, by becoming independent, or continuing to stay in this colonial, semi-imperial model with the U.S.?
Well, that's a huge debate, and it's actually really divisive amongst Puerto Ricans, which is part of how we got here, right? So because a lot of the parties that compete to get elected in Puerto Rico are organized around status options to change Puerto Rico's political status and relationship with the United States, they tend to neglect other issues other than status, things like economic development, things like education, things like healthcare policy. When these issues get ignored and status is at the forefront of these parties' minds, you really don't spend much time developing a platform for economic development.
Fernando Tornes Aponte is Assistant Professor of Public Policy and Political Science at the University of Maryland, Baltimore County. Thanks for joining us today.
It's been my pleasure.